Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Oh boy.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Dada.
To me, it's just a risk assessment situation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Darvin Ham, even given the financial stuff and all of this, right, and the human nature stuff, as we know, Rob Pelinka is like, his priority is to remain employed. Like that, he's going to do whatever it takes to remain employed. And if that means, you know, being the meat shield when Jeannie Buss says that she's not willing to fire Darvin Ham and hire a new head coach, then that's what Rob Pelinka is going to do. And if that means staring down LeBron after it, you know, and I'm not saying that this is definitely what Jeannie Buss would do. But if Jeannie Buss does say that Darvin has to stay, that would be a conversation that Rob Pelinka would have to have with LeBron James. And I think he would have it because his top priority again is remaining employed. All that said, to me, it, like from the Lakers standpoint here, if this is even a conversation, if you're remotely concerned that LeBron could walk or ask to be moved, I think there's kind of a handshake deal between the Lakers and LeBron that he will never ask for a trade because of what you're talking about. All of the times that they have just kind of, especially since the Russell Westbrook thing, all the times that they have just kind of said, nah, we're going to go in this direction, right? LeBron may prefer this and the Lakers go in the other direction. I think that there's kind of a handshake deal there that he will never ask for a trade. But, you know, that said, I don't see how he can, like, he knows how much work it took to be this prepared and this able at this stage of his life. You know, that I can't even fathom, like, it's hard for me to even think about mowing my lawn. And, you know, I'm a year younger than
LeBron. LeBron's got a few years on us. Yeah.
Yeah. And for him to like stare down, you know, mortality again and stare down, you know, father time again, and have to do all of that work all over again and know that the team that he plays on is still going to have this ceiling of Darvin Ham potentially sitting there to screw it all up, regardless of personnel. They could bring in Trae Young. They could bring in Donovan Mitchell. They could bring in, you know, whoever it is. Mikal Bridges is my preference, right? They could bring back Alex Caruso. It doesn't matter what the roster looks like. I don't trust Darvin Ham to be able to get the most out of it. And when you have LeBron at this stage of his career, at this stage of his life, you do still need a coach who can optimize a roster, because LeBron on his own is not good enough to overcome Nikola Jokic. He's not good enough to overcome, you know, Giannis in a series, or, you know, Steph and Draymond and Klay Thompson and Steve Kerr when it's LeBron and AD and a coach actively pulling in the opposite direction. You know, I don't think LeBron is capable of doing all those things. And I think he thinks it too. I think he sees it too. He saw last year, the very end of that Denver Nuggets season or series, he played 47 minutes in like 35 seconds or whatever it was. And was talking about retirement after the fact. And I think I never believed it for a second, but I do think it was an honest to God assessment of the situation. Like, that is the most I can do. That is everything that I have in my basketball, you know, being to try to win one game against these MFers, and we weren't able to do it, right? Like, yeah. I do think that, like, it's perfectly human for him to look at that, see how that plays out, and be like, I can't do that again, especially if that guy's still here. Like, if I, you know, and you know, if I'm the Lakers, I'm not willing to risk it. If I'm the Lakers, I'm not willing to sit there and say it's worth it to me to bring back. If he isn't the worst coach in the league, he's the second worst coach, right? Like, I think the only argument that people might offer up is probably like Monty Williams this year was the only coach who was worse than Darvin Ham. And I think
there's some arguments for like Adrian Griffin, Brian Keefe, Washington, you know.
Maybe Keefe had nothing to work with, and Griffin.
I don't think Chauncey has done anything to prove that he's a good coach, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that like we need to decide who's 30th, but you know, yeah.
he's in the conversation.
He's in the conversation. Yeah.
This would be a very ESPN segment, right? Who's the worst coach in the NBA?
I don't have the energy for that.
We need to bring Mad Dog on so he can be like, there's nobody worse than whoever coached the Lakers when they lost 11 straight championships to my Celtics. Let's move on, though. You know, before we get you out of here, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the women's tournament. Again, The Athletic had incredible coverage of all of this, and Sabrina was a big part of it. I want to talk about, I don't want to do the whole discussion about the discussion thing.
That's okay.
Really boring to me, but, Caitlin Clark and like the announcement right after the tournament that the Indiana Fever are going to have what, like 36 nationally 36 televised
out of 40
games.
National televised games.
Yeah. Yeah. All of them.
They admittedly know some about. Of national TV means like Amazon Prime Video, CBS Sports Network. So not like fully national games, but they are available beyond the Indiana market.
Yeah. And you know, I understand some of the pushback and in the Great White Hope things aspect of this. Like that's fine or whatever. But to me, watching her play and watching like the basketball world's response to her playing, like there are very few athletes that like bring about that kind of sport wide or even sports wide, because like people outside of the basketball universe were like, you had Mike Trout walk up to one of his games wearing a Caitlin Clark Iowa jersey.
Jalen Hurts was at the game in Cleveland. I don't think he's from Cleveland, but he was there.
and like, to me, you know, it's such a cool opportunity for the sport of women's basketball. But I also think that like, I think she carries the pressures of all of that remarkably well. Like she whines and she does all that stuff on the court. She talks her shit, which I love, by the way. But like the fact that she like, there's no way she doesn't feel this burden throughout that tournament. And there's no way she doesn't, every time the ratings are tweeted out about like what her latest, what record she just broke or the game that she just played in just broke. I think like beyond all of the nonsense that I saw off to the side while she was doing this, the part of this that blew me away was how well she carried being that kind of beacon of light for the sport. That was insane to watch how she handled all of that.
Yeah, she wears the crown really well. And it's not like she's been primed for this for 4 years, because like I covered the NCAA tournament last year. I was at her regional in Seattle, you know, so the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games. And there were tons of empty seats in these crowds, like for her Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games as a junior. Like I think it only really turned on a national audience when they beat South Carolina, like undefeated South Carolina in the Final Four last year, and then goes to the national title game. And obviously like that national title game delivered a big number, but it's not as if like she went into the UConn factory and like knew this was coming from her freshman season. I mean, she played her first 9 games of her college career. They were not available for anywhere other than like, I think there was some like Big Ten streaming. Like there wasn't any fans because it was a COVID season, but like she, I'm not going to say she like jumped into this with like no preparation, but like, it's not like we could have seen all of this coming. Like it happened.
This wasn't the LeBron
pretty
situation.
Quickly. Yeah. It happened.
Like LeBron,
quickly.
LeBron was a superstar in high school. He did a national tour when he was in, you know, getting ready to go pro.
Yeah. I mean, she was a top five recruit coming out of high school. I get that, but it's not like anyone could have predicted the massive stardom that would follow. And like you said, I mean, I think she's handled it so very well because, you know, obviously there are stories of her like signing all the jerseys for the fans and little girls who want to be just like her, and she takes time for them and all that. But like, just to perform at that level every day when you know everybody is watching you, like, you know, they're down, what, like 5 points in the final minute of the Big Ten title game, and she leads Iowa to a comeback against Nebraska there. You know, that really, really tough game against West Virginia in the second round at home, when I feel like she definitely feels more pressure at home. It seems like they're just the energy of everyone in Iowa watching her seems to be a little bit more to handle than like the way she played in Albany or in Cleveland later. But, you know, she just delivers over and over again. Like, I don't think you watch the title game against South Carolina and think like, oh, they would have won if Caitlin Clark had been better. Like, no, South Carolina was a better team.
Yeah.
They deserved to win that game.
Yeah.
And it, you know, but it exists in the same plane as Caitlin Clark, you know, being the light for everybody. Like you said, like you tune in to watch Caitlin Clark and you're exposed to everybody else. And I think that's pretty cool. And she understands like what this means for her. She's so perceptive about the history of women's basketball leading up to this point, and that, you know, she knows she's not the only figure leading the charge, but she's happy to be the face of it if that's what it means.
Yeah. You know,
that's what she needs to do to get people into it, right? Like, she's not calling out people for not being on the women's basketball train for longer. Like, she's accepting them for being here now and saying like, look at all of these other things you can see while you're here. But yeah, I think the poise is just really, really impressive. And just the fact that she has taken on this burden, right? Like, Dawn Staley even mentioned it as she was accepting the trophy for the national title. Like, I just want to thank Caitlin Clark for everything she's done to lift our sport. The player you just defeated, the player who has gotten more attention than any of your players, your team probably as a whole, and you understand what she has done. I think, to me, that was like the most revealing part of it, that Dawn Staley even recognizes like, hey, like, we can have the discussion about like Great White Hope or whatever, but at the base of it, she's doing something for us that we're all benefiting from.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is funny because I obviously kind of disagree with the current pros who were saying like, oh, she's going to learn when she gets here. Like, she's not going to be ready for this. And like, Gilbert Arenas is showing his ass again, doing the whole, like, you know, I wish he would just come out and say like, only black people should play my sport. Like, just say it, Gilbert. Just say it once. Just say it, like, because we know that's what you're saying. Like, that, just say it one time. But like, he did his thing, and then I think Diana Taurasi said her piece as well.
And she just said she's gonna have to play against grown women versus 18-year-olds. Like, it's different.
I think, like, you know, Cheryl Swoops, right, caught some heat for saying these things, and I actually think like some of the immediate and I think overly loud defense is kind of patronizing of Caitlin Clark, because she clearly doesn't need it. Like, she sees those quotes and she doesn't respond. I think she handles that really well too. Like, I think she can't wait to go out and play. Like, go out. Yeah, you're right. This is going to be a step up in competition. Cool. I want to see it. You know,
I mean, that's why she's not using her COVID year, right? That's why she decided to leave Iowa, where everything is laid out for her, right? Where she could make every record unbeatable until like the end of time for college basketball. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, she wants to step up to another level. She wants to take this challenge on.
Yeah, I was really impressed. And by the way, like, I was super impressed by like the women's game. And I thought on average, and anytime I tuned into a women's basketball game while the women's and men's tournament were playing side by side, I was so much more impressed by the women's game than the men's game. The men's game is a mess, man. I can't.
Other than
I can't,
UConn. UConn is very cool.
Well, yeah. But like, even there, like, just like the relative lack of athleticism that I just like keep seeing in that sport. It's just like, it's really kind of, it's, I don't remember it being this bad when I was a kid. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's the one and done thing. I have no idea. But when I was growing up, I don't remember the you know, I'm sorry, like, back in my day, like, I promise it, like, it wasn't this bad. I feel like I don't remember it being this ugly. But yeah, the women's sport in general and the women's tournament in general, like, I don't know how many different times we're going to see, you know, game Caitlin Clark plays in does this record number. I don't know how many times we're going to have to see that before we finally acknowledge, like, this is going to, like, you know, the women's basketball, especially if the WNBA ever gets their stuff together right. I saw their commissioner rights talking about how they're hoping to double their rights fees. Like, please set your
we don't need to come into the negotiations with that. Yeah.
like that can't be where you started. Like, yeah. You're announcing, like, but anyway, I don't know. What do you think it would take, though, for kind of waves generally at everybody to recognize, no, this is real. Like, this is not going anywhere. It's going to continue. Maybe not its exponential growth. Might be. I don't know. But, like, it's going to continue growing in popularity. It's this very cool thing. I think the women in general are incredibly marketable. They're, like, there is few things. I coached women's basketball when I came out of high school. And I'm telling you, it was the most fun I've had in the sport because the girls that I coached were just so much fun to be around. They just seemed so much more like approachable and relatable than the guys that even in the NBA, right? You have these zillionaire superstars in the NBA. And I actually think that, like, I would rather spend time with the women who were playing this game because they just seem so much more down to earth and so much more relatable and all these things. This thing is going to keep growing. At what point do you think it is being taken seriously in the way that it should be?
Yeah, I think NIL has been so huge for women's athletes because they just understand social media in a way that men don't and are able to market themselves just better than men have. Absolutely. I think. I mean, like, you look at these national commercials, maybe I just don't recognize them, but, like, I see Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins in national commercials. I don't see Donovan Klingon or Zach Edey, or, you know, it's not on the same level. And I mean, I think we're at a really interesting point here where, like you said, the women are more relatable, and, like, maybe that's almost part of the problem. Like, NBA players seem out of touch because they're gazillionaires, right? Like, the amount of money they make is incomprehensible. Yeah. And the goal of, you know, any sports league is for women to get to that point where they get to be gazillionaires. And do they become unrelatable at that point? Like, I don't know, but we're at this point now where the salaries that WNBA players make don't seem out of touch for somebody who's just a normal person turning on the television, right? Like, you're not offended by the fact that, like, Nafisa Collier has to sit out a game because, oh yeah, she only makes $200K a year. Like, it's okay if she needs to rest for a game. Like, I understand.
Right.
I sort of lost track of where I was going, but I think the key for college is going to be that they carry this momentum without Caitlin. Like, I think they've tried really hard to shine a light on Paige Beckers, on Juju Watkins, on, you know, Flaje Johnson, and all of these other people who will be stars next year that can carry that momentum forward. I don't think we're going to expect to see the same, you know, ratings figures that we did last year, but as long as you can build off of, like, the 2023 numbers, that should be fine, right? Like, we just need to see a general positive growth in that direction. And I think, you know, just it's a matter of ESPN investing in, like, showing these games. Like, there was like actual pregame coverage for all of these things and postgame coverage. And, like, I remember, like, the Scott Van Pelt show after the Iowa UConn Final Four was the highest rated Scott Van Pelt show ever. And the pregame, you know, for the national title game did better numbers than any national title game, like, pre-2023, which is, like, the pregame did better than the game. Like, there's real interest in these players, these athletes. And I think that there are enough stories that they can capitalize on that it doesn't just have to be Caitlin. I think, like, the real question is, what does the WNBA do about it? Because I don't worry about the future of the college game. I think with, you know, the fact that players have to stay 3 to 4 years and there is real investment at the grassroots level. Yeah, exactly.
That's an advantage. Yeah.
There's real investment at the grassroots level in, like, training these players and making them more prepared when they get to college. Like, you're seeing an absolute just growth in how good the game is, right? Like, just the talent level, the skill level is so much better than it was 10 years ago. So I think college is in a good place because it has the ESPN infrastructure, right? Like, they're going to be on your TV. You're going to have that March Madness 10 poll to look forward to. Even if it's not Caitlin, I think there are enough stars that people will gravitate towards. Like, I think Juju's going to obviously take a big step forward now that there's no Caitlin. But it's really, what does the WNBA do now that they do have Caitlin, right? And yeah, maybe it's ridiculous that the Indiana Fever, who finished 10th in the WNBA out of 12 teams last year, have 36 games on national television out of 40. 90% of their games are on national television.
Yeah.
Maybe it's ridiculous, but I don't think so. I think this is a league that has consistently been criticized for not marketing its stars. And like, does the average basketball fan, could they pick Asia Wilson out of a lineup, even though she is the very best basketball player in the world? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the average fan who just follows the NBA could do that. So yeah, if you're going to overkill on Caitlin, that's fine, because we saw what happened in college when they overkilled on Caitlin. You found other people to follow in the interim, right?
Yeah.
So if this is your opportunity, this is your opportunity as a WNBA, like, we have the golden goose right in front of us. So let's just, you know, pick up as many of those eggs as possible, because you just don't know if this opportunity is going to come along again, right? She is at this perfect inflection of, you know, with NIL, with her star being as high as possible, with people like actually expressing interest in women's sports, whether that's because of volleyball or soccer or anything else that has drawn their attention towards this particular space in an Olympic year, right? If she makes Team USA, that makes her even bigger of a draw, you know, for this potential sport. I just think that, like, this is kind of like the moment, right? Like, we're going to figure out if the WNBA has the guts, not the guts, but like the wherewithal to get this done if they capitalize on Caitlin. Like, I'm not worried about college. I think that has been on a good trajectory for a little while now. It's really the W, because there are so many really, really great players in W who I think are very marketable as is.
I think their response to Caitlin is perfectly natural, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, come on, come, like, can we see this first before we anoint her?
Yeah.
And I'm like, fine with that. What, like, I, like, people are like telling, like, me, like, don't, that's wrong. They're jealous of this. They're petty. It's like, yeah, they're athletes.
And when they see her in person and they accept that she's great, they'll accept that she's great if she is. You know, like, just how NBA players, like, when they saw Wemby for the first time, they're like, oh, okay. Like, there's something here, right? They're not going to be for the sake of being petty. I think we've seen that on the men's side, right? Like, if somebody generational comes through, they'll accept that. But yeah, I think rivalries, hating, as long as it's not, like, you know, racially motivated, is totally fine. And I think that, This is the go time for the WNBA, right? Like, if you really want to prove that you can have a standing, like, in that summer sports landscape, if you're trying to expand, like, create a bigger footprint around the country, you got to make it happen now, because you're never getting an opportunity like this again. I don't think it's coming, at least not for another generation or so.
And she's going to be playing in the W right away, right? Like,
yeah, the season starts in May.
She gets drafted like this month. She gets drafted
on Monday.
Yeah. And then
training camp starts on April 28th and the season starts in May. So they'll have the opportunity to just keep Caitlin coverage going on and on and on. Like, when she lands in Indiana, right? Like, when she first suits up for training camp, they could keep this going, like, pretty much daily up until the season starts. And then you have the games over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it was done on purpose. I think it's a scheduling thing, but, like, it works out really well for the WNBA, and it's really wise of them to, you know, yeah, I understand that there is going to be pushback, but you know what the pushback means? It means that you have somebody feeling a certain way about this thing. And, like, the only thing that you can't have if you're the WNBA is to kind of suppress her into apathy, and the general apathy that can exist with the W and that it's been trying to fight. So if you do overkill it, if you do push her in those 36 games of the 40 that they're going to play and put them on these unique platforms that they wouldn't otherwise have been, you're going to piss some people off, but you're making them feeling a certain way. Like, that's a good thing. You want that. And you know, obviously, I think more people are going to be happy about the fact that we're going to see her as often as we are on that stage and against those players, because, like, you're saying, you're absolutely correct, Sabrina. The sport in the WNBA is legitimately great. You know, I also think that, like, WNBA fans need to stop gatekeeping personally, but, like, I you know, but it's in that, like, kind of cool spot that, like, indie bands tend to be in right before they take off, right? Where the current fans are like, no, don't get bigger. Like, we're good. Don't let the idiots in, because, like, and then we started seeing, as the sport keeps getting bigger, that, like, the First Take shows and the morning sports shows come on, and you have NFL players saying all kinds of stupid stuff about a sport that they'd never watched before. But that's good too.
Yeah.
Like, it's dumb. It's dumb that it is good for you. But again, it's forcing these people who get casual fans to feel a certain way about a sport, and that's an emotion that didn't exist before. So I think all of this is a positive wave. And I'm really curious. I think it's going to work out. I do think that the WNBA has the infrastructure in terms of current stardom that, you know, if Caitlin Clark does struggle, it'll be on a stage where people start seeing like, wow, I thought, you know, she was really good in college. Who is this player that is playing better than her in this game? That's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll be good for the sport. And then also if she plays well enough to like keep this momentum going, then it's like the money's just like, it's going to start printing itself. So I'm really fascinated by how this is going to go. And congratulations, by the way, on insane coverage. It was really fun to watch you kind of come into your own on doing this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect when I made the move to covering women's basketball. Like, I obviously thought it was a growth opportunity, you know, just where the sport was. And I'm obviously passionate about the sport itself. But, like, I didn't think we'd already exceed, like, people that were reading my NBA stuff on women's basketball stuff. We're at that point, like, a year and a half in, and it's pretty cool.
That's dope. That is really, really cool. All right, before we – you can stick around if you want, Sabrina, but we do have some super comments that I have to
hear. Oh, I
got to
hear the noise for the super comments. So, yeah.
It's important. It's important. All right, so we have the first one here from Legend, which means – fuck Boston! Oh, it's so pretty. Legend writes, why did Jay Suggs trade not happen? He's elite now. Jalen Suggs, I'm guessing, and I don't know. I don't know if a Jalen Suggs trade was ever on the table. If it was and it didn't happen, it's because the Lakers would have had to move D'Angelo Russell or Austin Reeves. And if the Lakers weren't willing to move Reeves for Suggs or for Murray, who is better than Suggs, then that kind of tracks. And if you know, we saw the league not really be interested in trading for a D'Angelo Russell with a player option on his contract, then that's going to hurt that trade anyway. So you could put, you know, why did underlined
trade not
here?
Happen,
yeah. Yeah, not happen. And those are the general two reasons there. I wish I liked Suggs' game more.
It's because you're a UCLA fan and you have the memory of him hitting that shot against UCLA in the Final Four. That's what it is.
Actually, now I don't wish I liked this game more. all right, we have another one here, which I think makes it interesting. All right, so Darvin, this is from Showtime Lakers Baby, saying Darvin seems like a college coach, but I don't think he's built for the league. Who do we want to go get? Don't say Phil, either Jackson or Handy. Well, look, Handy was LeBron's preference the first time around when they hired Darvin.
Yeah.
And that is going to, if Ty Lue isn't available, Handy is once again going to be LeBron James's preference here. And I don't know, personally, I think it would be good to get back on the same page as LeBron with the organization. Handy might not be the best option. I think if you do hire Handy, that you need to kind of fill out the rest of your staff with you know, player coaches that help him in other areas that he might be deficient in. That was, I think, a mistake that they made with Ham. I thought mm-hmm. that, and even
there's Vogel, no one with head coaching experience on his staff.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I think that you would need to go out and do that. There is. Do you have a preference here if the Lakers do fire Ham?
Why can't we get like a, you know, a Thunder, one of their G League guys? Like, who's running the Oklahoma City Blue these days?
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of those guys. And this isn't me like crapping on this contingent of Lakers coverage, right? But I know like Sean Davis and Tim from the Lakers Exceptionalism Pod, they always have their like list of X's and O's coaches that mm-hmm. that like would step in and be really good. I think the impact of an X's and O's coach would be kind of nullified by the way that LeBron prefers to play. And I would just rather get a guy that LeBron, I know, is going to buy into and then try to make up for it with, like, I think it was poorly executed. I think Chris Gent, got a little carried away this year with like the extent of the five out stuff and just like, generally speaking, the personnel decisions that were made for the five out system, But that idea, right, bringing in somebody who is capable of those things to help Handy with the X's and O's, or to help with the, like, I loved the I remember Mike Brown's old staff when he was the Lakers coach.
The most unbelievable staff ever assembled, right? Quinn Snyder, Ettore Messina.
Yeah.
I think Darvin was actually on that staff, wasn't he? Or wait, no, it was,
no,
hang on, let me pull it up.
No, it was the guy, Steve Clifford, I think, was on that staff.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, it's a whole bunch of like future head coaches that, that were on that staff. And I think either future or past too, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah. Darvin was on that staff. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. Wow. Full circle.
They aged pretty well, you know.
I take it back. That staff sucked. Now that I think about it.
They've all gone to great places, you know.
Yeah. All right. We have one more, which means we,
Dan,
we get
Dan
to hear
Tony
this one
was
more
there
time.
The next year too. Have fun.
Yeah. Fuck Boston! Rye Guy writes, back to the viral Braun slash Ham video from the Golden State game. Over 5 million views between IG and Twitter alone in 2 days. Imagine it's gotten back to the players slash the team. They see all of this. Like, that is one of the first things that you learn in doing this stuff, is how attuned to our content that they are. Like, I remember finding out, this was really early in my career, but I remember finding out that when I was writing at Silver Screen, John Black, the old head of PR, mm-hmm. would have people print out our articles so that he could read them, which is so perfectly on brand for John Black. Like, he was so behind the times that he didn't like have a computer or a phone that he would just like read the stuff on. He would get it printed out. So they are very aware of all of their coverage, as they should be. If you have a PR staff worth its weight in lead, that is their job, is to make sure that they are aware of all of those things. They are never surprised by these things going viral. The thing that has really surprised me and stuck out, and I've pointed this out over the course of the season, is how little pushback there has been to any of the noise about Darvin. Like, instead, you had D'Angelo Russell actually go out there and second a lot of the opinions and reporting on Darvin. That's another reason that I can't fathom this guy being back, given how little respect the locker room doesn't seem to have for him, but clearly has for him. Like, it's wild how few people came to. I remember the Lakers played against Memphis, either Memphis or Toronto, and their coach lost their mind over a call. Like, actually,
probably Toronto.
No, because it was a situation where the coach like went onto the court and was almost made contact with a player. I think he like made contact with Prince. I think it was Jenkins from Memphis, and some of the guys from Memphis were like asked about it, and they were all like, "No, man, like that guy Jenkins is our guy. We are, you know, we stand behind him 100%." Right? This is, and they really kind of circled the wagons around their head coach. And I can just imagine, like, if players, we've heard it, right? You know, getting a player get asked about Darvin Ham, and it's like, how do you feel about this guy? And it's like, oh, he's trying.
Yeah.
All right. I have taken up way too much of your time, Sabrina. I greatly appreciate you stopping by to talk about all of these things with me. I am really sad to hear that you ignored, or you weren't able to watch the like good 3 weeks of Lakers basketball this season.
Renaissance. Yeah. Don't worry. Follow Harrison on Twitter. That's, I'm aware.
Really unfortunate timing. On
I'll always
part.
Have the IST, Anthony. Don't worry.
Do you have your t-shirt? Like, but yeah, before we get you out of here, is there anything that you want to plug? Anything that I want to get out of your way and make sure you guide everybody to? Again, I'm telling you guys, I subscribe to The Athletic because of Sabrina back when she started there. I'm not kidding. That is an actual fact.
Yeah. So the WNBA draft coming up on Monday, we'll have a lot of stuff leading up to it. I've got some more stuff on Caitlin Clark actually coming up before then.
Who do you think is going first?
Yeah. Read my mock draft to find out. And then after the draft, obviously lots of coverage, you know, based on team specific needs. We'll have a little bit of a lull for the next 2 weeks because yes, I have been working quite hard over the last 3 weeks during the tournament. Forgive me, But, you know, once WNBA training camps start up, like, this is the place you're going to want to find, like, all of your analysis about the teams and the rookie class and what we can expect coming into this season. And the Athletic Women's Basketball Show is, in my opinion, the podcast to listen to keep up with your women's basketball news.
It's all excellent. I've always believed in Sabrina, right? From day one at Silver Screen and Roll, I always thought that you were going to be doing some really cool things. And then to watch that actually come to fruition with your coverage of women's basketball has been really, really fun. So thank you a ton for hopping on here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please do hit that subscribe button if you're watching here on YouTube. If you're watching, if you're one of the 800 people who are watching on Twitter right now, please do hit that. Head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge and you can subscribe to the show there. If you are listening to this tomorrow morning via podcast, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, preferably on Odyssey. So until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. Tomorrow will be Aaron Larsoul. Today was Sabrina Merchant. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.